If there's a back door into heaven, maybe I'll find it for you too.
Maybe I don't agree with his politics, I add, unwilling to get into another spiritual debate.
Maybe he disagrees with yours. Doesn't mean he can't be an ally. And you forget, I know you. And stop separating my pills, I'm not an invalid.
Taking in her frail appearance, I can't help my reply. You're doing a good job getting there. Don't drink tonight. I'm not searching the house, but if you do, you know what will happen.
Yeah. Go.
She dismisses me as I swipe the remote and begin clicking through channels. The mood intensity shifts behind me before Cecilia speaks up, her question for Delphine.
Should we stay? Not my first time. Go. The night is young, and so are you. Don't waste it.
Delphine gives in a typical reply, though her weak tone betrays the strength of the declaration. Fighting the urge to snap out my rebuttal, I mutter it instead. You are too. To say that whatever feelings I have for my aunt are complex would be a gross understatement. In the last handful of years, we've come to an understanding of sorts. In no way do I view her as a parent, but a parent is what she's tried to resemble as of late. More recently, in the months, she's convinced herself her death is imminent. Only escalating her illness with the way she treats her body, Delphine's been trying to pass down what nuggets of wisdom she feels are fitting for me. To her credit, I've been listening. For the most part, our efforts have proven worth it. We've salvaged what relationship we're capable of, unless during our conversations I'm reminded of her cruelty early on. Admittedly, seeing her so weak and terrified has beaten a lot of the resentment out of me. Even though a raging alcoholic, she was once a force to be reckoned with. A force that at one point Tobias and I found impossible to manage. Amidst her drunken ramblings over the years, some of her logic as Tobias, Sean, Tyler, and I strategized was brilliant. We put it to use, especially her insight on fighting the machine we all loathe. In that, she's inadvertently been a part of rearing the soldiers we become, even if she lost the war of having her own role in our movement. If and when Delphine loses this last fight, I'm unsure of how I'll feel or what, and the idea of that has me mindlessly filtering channels as Cecilia softly whispers,
Romans chapter 8, verses 38 and 39.
A flip of pages sounds between my continuous channel clicks as Delphine recites the designated passage.
For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height or depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord.
A brief silence ensues before Tati speaks up with a shake in her voice, her question posed to Cecilia.
Do you believe that's true?
Turning, I'm slammed into by the sight of Cecilia kneeling at Delphine's feet as she offers more words of comfort.
Those are the only verses I've memorized, so I guess maybe I want to believe it.
Delphine's eyes slowly lift to mine and Cecilia's deep blue gaze follows. The second we connect, a tidal wave of awareness crashes into me. That's when I see it, fucking feel it, and I'm not the only one. A heartbeat later, Delphine confirms it with a French whispered warning.
Elle est trop belle, trop intelligente, mais trop jeune. Cette fille sera ta perte.
She is too beautiful, too smart, but too young. This girl will be your undoing. Whoosh, whoosh.
What happened to your parents?
Cecilia's question during the drive back to King's reverberates through the cabin of my Camaro as I exit, leaving her in the passenger seat. Feeling her heavy gaze following me as I stalk away, I don't bother to acknowledge Sean, who stands shrouded in the dark just outside the bay. His own calculating stare adding weight to hers as I make a beeline for my toolbox while my heartbeat thunders in my ears. Whoosh, whoosh. Grabbing my toolbox from the garage, I press through the back door, heading through our littered graveyard of forgotten cars toward the Buick. Whoosh, whoosh. There's always been an undertow-like grip in Cecilia's gaze, a grip and drag I've successfully managed to dodge. Until tonight, when she glanced up at me from where she knelt at another unknown enemy's feet, her empathy and humanity on full display, whoosh, whoosh. That exchange was a bitch slap, forcing me to finally acknowledge everything I've been purposefully overlooking when it comes to Cecilia. Propping the hood of the Buick, I plug in the extension cord attached to the shop light before sifting through my tools. Intent on losing myself in monotonous work, I toss them around as those seconds threaten to burn into memory while the goddamn whisper I've heard multiple times snakes its way in. She knows. The fuck she does. But our earlier exchanges indicated otherwise as she picked up on every unspoken word between us. She undoubtedly felt my annoyance with the fast conclusions she drew during our earlier errand. Not a minute later, while stowing away my gun, a temptation reared its unwanted head as my fingers brushed her skin, gathering the rapidly building electricity as it pulsated between us. Our lips so fucking close it would take little to no effort to erase the distance and finally get a taste. Not long after, while rolling through the drugstore pickup, Cecilia's jealousy emanated from the back seat, jealousy she didn't bother to mask as the pharmacist I fucked me. She even took pleasure when Delphine slung insults toward the girl, as I did when I busted her, meeting her gaze in the rearview. That pulse pinged and lingered through the Camaro, even while Delphine rode passenger. Sidestepping those urges was becoming first nature for me until those few seconds of eye contact in Delphine's living room. The final straw was when Cecilia prodded me with the million-dollar question on the drive back to the garage, the answer to which would solve a lot of Cecilia's mystery regarding me.
What happened to your parents?
My inclination was to reply with something along the lines of, "Your father found out about my parents' plans to expose him, so he staged a plant explosion to silence them while scaring the fuck out of anyone else with ideas of attempting the same." That reply was suppressed even as it was constructed because of the concern in her tone. For me. I could end this charade now if I wanted to, but something about the way she spoke to Roman earlier today had me considering Sean's pleas to try to see around the guilt by association. What I didn't expect was for it to happen. But in those short seconds, what I saw, felt, forced that disconnect. For the first time, I saw nothing but her. When we met with RB, as I assumed, she'd passed judgment on us both in minutes. I called her out for it. In truth, I set her up, then blamed her for her ignorance when she was just another victim of a system designed to keep us discriminatory and indifferent to each other's circumstances. The difference is, I know Cecilia's circumstances, and now she knows mine, especially after forcing her way into my former childhood home and seeing the conditions in which I was raised. The second she stepped in, I felt the understanding washing through her. Just after, her misplaced determination kicked in to care for yet another unforeseen adversary. Delphine. Delphine, who never got over our parents' murder but could never put the vodka down long enough to do anything about it. She was almost too slow on the uptake when I introduced Cecilia, if only to see how Delphine would react. When my aunt finally got on the page and realized who Cecilia was, the difference in personality and treatment was close to imperceptible, for those who didn't know better. I did, and it was the difference I saw that shocked the fuck out of me. There was no misinterpreting what was in Delphine's expression after decades of alcohol-induced tirades. Guilt. She was littered with it after their little impromptu Bible study, but why? Why in the hell would a woman who hates Roman as much, if not more, than my brother and I, harbor guilt for anyone with Roman's blood pumping through their veins? It's when Cecilia selflessly attempted to quiet my aunt's fears that my world fucking tilted, and I realized I'm just as guilty of having my own preconceived notions. Believing that when it comes to Cecilia, evil is inherited instead of taught. Even if the former is possible, she's untouched by it. By him, by choice. She's rebuked her father in all the ways that matter. It was then I glimpsed some of the blank canvas Sean's been begging me to see. Unlike countless others, Cecilia's anxious to understand the world around her, and the people in it. the why of it all. She might be on some mission to play with fire and stick it to her father, but it's her own rebellion against the hand she herself was personally dealt that fuels her. In that, we're alike. In that, she's like us. Ensnared by her, in that short time, realization struck. Cecilia Horner is filled to the fucking brim with untapped potential. There's a sort of power brewing within her that not even she is aware of. That's what I saw, felt, and rang through me with absolute certainty. Not her age, beauty, or our undeniable chemistry, or even the danger she presents to us. The realization was so visceral that it had the hairs on my neck rising. Now that I've seen it, it can't be denied. Tossing my wrench into my toolbox, I step back and stare up at the night sky as Delphine's prediction rings clear.
She is too beautiful, too smart, but too young. This girl will be your undoing.
A warning that had me speeding Cecilia straight back into the safety of Sean's arms. Whoosh, whoosh. The wind kicks up, the breeze rolling through the junkyard as thunder rumbles in the distance. A reminder that at some point in the future, a giant is coming to dole out retribution to those ignorant of its existence. A giant that exists because I took part in its creation. And with each day that passes, it draws near. Dread cloaks me with the knowledge that when it finally arrives, it will be just as blind and unforgiving as I've been, and none of us will be able to stop it. 21. Pulling up to the garage after managing a few agitated hours of sleep, I joined Jeremy, Peter, and Tyler at the high-top table tucked in the corner of the commercial bay. Russell approaches, wiping his hands on a shop towel, glancing back at the bustling lobby. Just inside, a preschooler presses his face against the glass door as Russell speaks up. I have 5 minutes, tops, before Mrs. George starts demanding to know when I'll be done. Tyler dives in. All phones in the safe. Jeremy nods, not bothering with any of his usual antics. So, we finally talking about the gun? Just discussing strategy for our upcoming ball game. I jerk my head toward a customer exiting a nearby car. Now that we know who the players are. Jeremy glances back and winces as Tyler leans in, speaking low. So, here's what we know. Spencer's company, like most major shipping companies, is freight forward. Meaning, when a requisition or a ball order comes in from any foreign country, a U.S. military specialist assigns the order to a freight forward company for fulfillment, processing the balls from that point to gain authority from the ordering country to see it through until the balls are received and accounted for. Russell leans in on a whisper.
It goes that far? We're talking dirty military and corrupt foreign government officials?
Yeah, it does. Tyler supplies while scanning the parking lot. And considering how rare these balls are, I knew exactly where to dig. Peter gapes at us.
Jesus, who knew Spencer was capable of something like this?
Tyler's expression hardens. It's clear by the way they irresponsibly guard the balls in that shit shack that they've been getting away with this for some time. Spencer's part is easy, which makes the case of his involvement open and shut. His hands couldn't be redder. The specialist handling the order is just as compromised as the buyer because there is some serious protocol when it comes to ball sales. Russell audibly starts piecing it together.
I read a story the other day that balls that were supposed to be on a military base were used in a street robbery.
Fuck. So this means that Spencer and the specialist work with the dirty foreign official under the guise they're ordering balls for their own military, receives them, and then falsifies the ball's location on a foreign base in their country before shipping them back to U.S. soil to sell to God knows who?
Tyler dips his chin. That's the sum of it. Solves a little of the mystery of how some who should never get their hands on these types of weapons acquire them. Though rare, this is one of those ways, and it's the action of these greedy fucks selling out their stars and stripes, disgracing the rest of us in uniform. So, when this type of shit is discovered by those serving with good intentions, it's a big fucking deal.
Russell glances over at Tyler. Which makes this personal for you?
Goddamn right it does, Tyler snaps. Which is why I've tracked who requested the balls and what specialist here they're working with. I'm guaranteeing all involved are getting a share of the sales, considering each of the big balls in our park are worth 20 to 30 grand each.
Peter's money-hungry eyes bulge.
Jesus, that's
more than what's in your piggy bank, and that balance isn't changing anytime soon, I snap, cutting off any illusions he might have about profiting. Mrs. George chooses that moment to poke her head into the garage.
Russell, I've got to be at my hair appointment by 9.
Russell groans, muttering a low, "Told you," before amplifying his reply to her.
I'll have you out of here in 15, Mrs. George.
Mrs. George leaves us with a withering stare before retreating into the lobby as I pick back up. More crates were delivered to the warehouse last night, and we still don't know who's coming for them and when, so the clock is ticking. Timing is everything here, Tyler tosses in. Always is, I toss back. But before we make a move, we need to get the bulk of the balls into our possession because we don't want the kids buying them and playing with them in the streets. Right now, Tyler adds, from their perspective, everything looks untouched. This gives us a closing window to get what we need, so it's all hands on deck because once we go there, Tyler gives us each a pointed look. There's no going back. Russell looks between all of us, his face paling as he gathers the enormity of the situation.
But if we draw the wrong attention and our plan backfires,
we'll summon the perfect storm, Tyler finishes. We're talking a majority of the big players, including the FBI, ATF, and the military itself sniffing in our backyard.
So it's a good thing we've got feathered friends in high places, I add.
A tense beat of silence passes as the stakes set in. None of us expected to deal with something so high risk this early. Peter speaks up.
So, what is the plan?
Glancing around, I make a quick decision and walk over to the tool shelf, snatching 3 solo cups from a sleeve along with a handful of washers from a coffee tin. Taking a side of the high top away from the rest of them, I line the cups up on the table and lift a single washer. Using my sleight of hand, I place it beneath the cup before scrambling them. The washer noisily drags on the table, all eyes on the cups until I stop and lift my gaze to Jeremy for his guess. Jeremy sighs and points to what he's sure is the obvious cup, and I lift it. Empty. His eyes widen in surprise as I slowly start to re-scramble. Russell groans in protest.
Hey, Dom, you are aware we have a lobby full of people, right? No need for a visual demonstration to get your point across. Contrary to what you might think, Jeremy is the only idiot here.
Jeremy gapes at him.
That really hurt.
Peter speaks up. Dom, we get it. We're going to use illusion to get the job done. It's child's play. You going to sing us Ring Around the Rosie too? I pause my movements. Have you ever examined the lyrics to that sadistic fucking nursery rhyme? I resume my version of the shell shuffle.
Ring Around the Rosie, I relay, refers to the rash associated with the plague. Posy was a bouquet used to mask the smell of decaying flesh.
Ashes, ashes, we all fall down, Peter rasps out thoughtfully. Damn, that is some sick shit.
See how that works? I draw out. Everyone at this table probably knows the words. They nod in confirmation. That's the crux of our lack of critical thinking. That sick rhyme and countless others have been passed down for generations because we've been careless as to what we teach one another.
Aye, aye, Peter.
Bet you'll think twice before you sing that lullaby to your baby sister.
I stop my shuffle.
And when you have a spare minute, Google the origin of Jack and Jill and some of the others, and you'll soon find our Mother Goose was in favor of Munchausen.
Russell makes his guess and weighs in.
So, I gather we're going to have them all scrambling to find the balls?
No, brother, Tyler says, a devious smile lighting his face as I swipe the cups off the empty table and Tyler extends a closed hand over it, slowly lifting his fingers to reveal a palm full of washers.
We're going to eliminate the game.
Stalking back to my Camaro, when Mrs. George pokes her head out again, I leave Tyler to lay out our strategy of framing Spencer and his accomplices without drawing attention to the club. Retrieving my phone from the glove box, I power it on to see a waiting text from Sean.
Sean, meet me at the lake. Bring the usual.
Got shit to do. The bubbles immediately start.
Sean, yeah, you do. But you're taking the day off.
22.
Encore, maman? Again, mama?
Patience.
She tosses my pajamas on the bed next to me,
arms up.
Encore, maman. Again, mama. I yell louder, lifting my arms.
Such a demanding little lark.
She says, pulling my shirt down before pinching my nose.
Count with me.
Un, deux, trois. One, two, three. We recite together before she begins to sing.
Alouette, gentille alouette, alouette, je te plumerai.
Lark, gentle lark. Lark, I will pull your feathers.
You sing too, gentle lark.
Je te plumerai la tête. I will pluck your feathers off your head. I sing as she begins to tickle me.
Je te plumerai la tête.
I will pluck your feathers off your head, she sings back.
Et la tête.
Off your head, she sings high. Et la tête. Off your head, I drop my chin and sing low.
Alouette.
Lark, she sings. Alouette. Lark, I sing back. She presses her nose to mine, our eyes getting bigger as we sing together.
Oh.
She pushes me back on the bed, hair tickling my belly as she kisses it, and I try to wiggle away. Encore, maman, I yell as she chases my foot with my pajama pants.
Et la bec.
Off your beak, she pinches my lips.
Et la tête.
Off your head, she plucks my hair.
Alouette.
Lark. She stops, yawning. Maman, you did not sing at all.
We could sing again tomorrow.
But we didn't. We didn't sing. We never got to sing again. Maman, I whisper, speeding away from the lake, chest burning as trees blur in my peripheral. Irony strikes me that mere hours ago, I chastised my inked brother for taking stock in a nursery rhyme while I replay the one I'm most familiar with. A subconscious punishment. Atonement demanded by my psyche to relive one of the handful of vivid memories I have with my mother. One of my last, when Maman declared me her gentle little bird. What would she think of me now? What would she think of the fact that I've become a different bird entirely? A bird of prey, a bird fueled by retribution, a cunning bird capable of acts so vile that boy is almost unrecognizable to me now. A liar, a thief, a master of deception. A bird capable of taking part in destroying an innocent girl in the name of vengeance. But what transpired on that lake float didn't feel like that. At all. It felt like the opposite of that.
Dominic.
Cecilia's moans skitter down my spine as her coconut-scented oil seeps further into my skin. My cock stirs at the memory of her above me and beneath me. The lust-filled tidal wave that crashed into me by way of a deep blue stare. Her parted lips and the sounds coming out of them. A long pull of her pebbled nipple in my mouth. The feel of her flawless skin between my bruising fingertips. Her velvet tongue thrashing against mine. Her endlessly long legs cradling me as she sank down onto me before we clicked into place. The fit fucking surreal. Today's forecast did not call for, or in any way predict, me fucking Cecilia Horner. But it didn't feel like fucking. What that felt like was otherworldly. The snap happened so abruptly that the static that always accompanied us caught fucking fire as the noise stopped. I succumbed so quickly that I made my own will a laughingstock, but was rewarded in a way that I experienced every single moment. With just a kiss, this bird totally fell under the spell of the shiny, spinning thing. In offering her my fuse, she ignited me. Fire and water, she's both burn and soothe. The haze I've been immersed in lifted so fast. It was as if I had roused from a deep sleep only to open my eyes and see the world through a magnifying glass.
All of my senses became more acute as sensation and sound overwhelmed me. The lake waves breaking against the float, the sharp intakes and exhales of breath, the feel of my heartbeat, the electricity that flowed at my fingertips, the thunderous warning that rumbled through the sky. Though I bat away any foreboding feelings induced by any idiotic fairy tale I conjured as she swept me into a fucking fantasy. I wanted her so goddamned much that I would have defied anything or anyone who tried to separate us.
Dominic.
For the first time since the nightmare I'd existed in for weeks began, I felt like I'd surfaced from being underwater and took a much-needed breath. A breath of realization that I am a living, breathing man. A man starved due to self-deprivation, in dire need of the woman spread in front of me. I took the breath, allowing everything I felt to ring true, in the way I touched her, voicing the few words that came to me, my guard absent. No longer feeling like I was watching just outside my own life, but participating in it, I was capable of taste again and savored hers. Touch turned into worship. With every deep thrust inside her, the burdens weighing me down were forgotten. Something so natural and straightforward for most, but so complicated for me. If fucking was all we had done, I'd already be home, finding another way to fill my time. But it wasn't. I totally lost myself in her, and every second of it only ramped up the one before. Fully hard from the recollection, I speed forward in the opposite direction of the sun as I attempt to race away from the fact that the best I've ever fucking felt in the whole of my existence was when I was moving inside Cecilia Horner. Speeding past any route home, knowing I can't be anywhere near where she is, I pour every effort I have into putting those minutes, that stolen time, into its respective box. Cecilia and I are practically strangers. But that interlude said otherwise, just as the whisper informed me the second I laid eyes on her and every time since. The last part of said whisper, I refused and denied even after I saw her for the first time without the grudge in my eyes. She knows. She knows you. Tightening my hands around the wheel, I curse whatever fate brought her into my life because finally allowing it to happen, wanting it to happen, and in participating in it, I lost the most important battle I had yet to fight. Goddamn, Sean. Goddamn them both. Goddamn you, I grunt as the clarity threatens to disperse while the weight of the secret I just took part in begins to take its toll. Chest thumping, I lick the remnants of the kiss I left her with. A kiss that lingered with a promise I'll never be able to see through. A fresh wave of culpability crashes into me as another vivid memory surfaces. My eyes fixed on a buzzing tattoo gun before lifting to meet his where he hovers a foot away. His expression a mix of pride and obvious affection. Pride and affection I may never see again because in finding that bliss and momentary peace with Cecilia, I might have lost my forever constant. My brother. Turning into the heavily concealed driveway, I speed past endless acres of land and park at the foot of his porch. Taking the wide steps up to the ancient farmhouse, the door opens just as I lift my knuckles to knock. Denny's eyes roll over me in a mix of curiosity and concern for a second before he dips his chin and widens the door enough for me to step through. I palm my cell phone against his chest as I pass. He takes it, my intent for being here made clear as I make my way through the house, retreating into his guest bedroom. Within seconds, I'm stripped bare, every muscle in my body shutting down with fatigue, my mother's voice ringing through as I collapse onto the mattress.
Il est temps de dormir, petit prince.
It's time to sleep, little prince. 23. My reward for fucking my nemesis's daughter? 18 straight hours of comatose sleep. Sleep my body finally allowed me after temporarily forgetting my ink and possibly fucking away my brother's trust. The Cecilia-induced haze I was under dissipated the second my eyes popped open at nightfall the next day. After spending the better part of last night into this morning exploring Denny's endless acres of cultivated farmland, my determination kicked in to rectify the situation. Feeling I've summoned what I need due to my literal pre-dick-ament, I stepped through the front door, finding Denny in the kitchen. Spotting me, he wordlessly pours a cup of steaming brew before holding it out and offering. Taking a sip, I thank him, and he replies with a grunt before spraying his counter with a label-free bottle to wipe it down. No doubt the concoction is his own mix. What so many don't know about Denny, who always passes in the sharing circle, is that he's our most resourceful bird. He made it his mission to utilize the farmland he bought outright and mastered it in a way that would put all doomsdayers to shame. Whether chemist or carpenter, he fills whatever role necessary to self-sustain without help from the outside world. For that, he has my admiration. We're alike in the fact that he both craves and thrives in isolation while working overtime to exercise restless energy. Glancing outside his floor-to-ceiling windows at the blooming grounds of his personal compound, it's apparent he's as restless as ever. Of all our birds, Denny is amongst my most trusted, next to his fiancée. Layla was brought in early on by another bird, Craig, who became a fast liability after getting inked and took pleasure in treating Layla like shit. His tirade ended a mere week after Denny was brought into the flock and laid eyes on Layla, choosing her as his first big heist. Their relationship since has been intense, to say the least. Denny's borderline obsession with Layla turned into full-blown possession when he not only marked her, but ringed her finger soon after, making fucking sure everyone else got the memo. Suspicions are that Denny delivered the news to Craig personally. Whether Craig's death was by Denny's design remains unknown, and we decided that if that was the case, it was his secret to keep, because if so, Denny did us all a service. And like Layla, Denny's a master at guarding secrets with a heaving side helping of not asking before carrying orders out to the letter. If I could, I'd replicate him. And where has your ladybird flown off to? Denny shrugs. Figured you didn't want her asking questions, so I tasked her with an errand to give you a chance to make a clean getaway. You really do speak my love language, bro. I tip my cup toward him and salute. Grinning, he pulls open a drawer, producing my burner. Anything happened while I was out? I ask, taking it. Yeah, we got what we needed, he confirms. I nod, pleased by the fact that they used my brief sabbatical to successfully lift Prince from Spencer's accomplices. It brings us a step closer to marching Spencer toward the guillotine. I'm going to take off. I walk my cup over to the sink and rinse it, soaking in the view of his pond and the surrounding grounds. What you've done with the place, man, it's incredible. A recluse's dream. It is, thanks, he says with a pride-filled grin. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for the hospitality. Anytime, he offers, walking me to the door. You hate company, I chuckle. Not the quiet kind. His lips lift before I take the stairs of his porch, pulling my keys from my jeans. He calls after me, stopping me at my driver's door. You good, Dom? Almost made a clean getaway, I jest. I only give a fuck because of the state you were in when you got here. It's nothing I can't handle. See you tonight. See you, he says before shutting the door, no doubt relieved I didn't want to talk feelings. Pulling up to the townhouse a few hours later, I park next to Sean's Nova and gather the bags, littering my passenger seat. Just as I hit the top of the stairs, Sean's bedroom door opens. Flipping on my bedroom light, I place my burner on the magnetic strip that blocks all digital signals before dumping the bag's contents on my bed. A second later, Sean fills my doorway, assessing me as I start to line my empty shelf. What's good, brother? Not a lot, since both my girl and best friend went AWOL. Well, you know me. If you've got a personal problem, it's best to keep it to yourself. He chuckles, sauntering into the room. You're such a dick. Yet, like all the others, you keep coming back for more, I deadpan. I continue to load my shelves as Sean clears his throat. He slipped his shorts down enough so his ready cock sprang free, he recites, open paperback in hand. He was so hard, pre-cum dripped from the tip. He took it in his hand and pumped a few times. I see we're expanding our summer reading repertoire, he muses, tilting the book my way.
The romance genre alone grosses over $1 billion a year, I counter, which is currently more than our collective net worth. Gathering more books, I turn to stock them and pause when I glimpse the hardback sitting on the shelf above.
Clearly, they're cashing in on you, Sean quips as I brush my finger down the severely cracked spine of my mother's copy of Le Petit Prince.
A vision of her shudders in, nestled in her favorite tattered chair, the open book resting on the arm of it as the sun streams through the window behind her. This time, I'm thankful for the memory without the accompanying guilt.
Or maybe you're the one planning on cashing in, he rasps thoughtfully, sorting through the books.
Glancing back, I see his brows pull in confusion.
What is this, Dom? His eyes narrow. What the fuck are you doing?
Whatever it takes, I relay for a second time. His mood shifts instantly.
So you disappear for 2 fucking days and come back with a plan to, what, hurt her?
The ink will always win, I recite back to him.
I told you all in, Dom, and I fucking meant it. You seem to forget you don't make the calls. You made this call, and if I can lure her out of hiding, I'm inviting her to the meetup tonight.
I dip my chin. I'll drive her in.
To protect her,
both statement and question.
Sure. God damn it, he runs his hand through his hair. If you're planning on hurting her, maybe you conveniently forgot, but it was your plan to use her to get to Roman. I won't let you intentionally fuck with her.
The way you have me? He swallows, eyes dropping as I turn back to the shelves. We're going to end her father, Sean. There's no future for you and Cecilia. Make peace with it.
I get that, but you fucking need to because France is eventually going to find what he's looking for, and when he does, it's only a matter of time.
Once that happens, you can't protect her.
And you won't?
Annoyed, I push past him to grab a shower, and he grips my bicep to stop me. Jerking away, I glare at him. In a matter of hours, by your design, she's going to know damn near everything and will most likely run anyway. So this conversation is pointless. Are you prepared for that? Because that's the risk you're taking, baptizing her by fire.
He hooks his thumbs into his jeans pocket. It's the way we've always done it when a recruit is ready. She's earned my trust and the right to know who we are.
But she never truly will she? Even after you stomp on her rose-colored glasses. Stepping toward my bathroom, I fist off my shirt. I'm done debating this. Completely fucking done arguing about her. It was a mistake to bring her anywhere near us.
That's your fear talking. No, it's yours. We need to focus.
Sean bites his piercing before turning to stalk out.
You were right about her, I call after him, kicking off my boots. I'll give you that much. I see her potential. Just not for our club.
He runs a hand through his hair as he lingers just inside my door.
Align yourself to any agenda you want when it comes to her, but I was fucking there, and I felt that shit happen between you.
He shakes his head, refuting my stance.
You won't hurt her. Not intentionally.
You have no fucking idea what I'm capable of, I grit out as he leers at me.
Yeah, well, apparently neither do you, asshole, he counters, stalking out, his parting words filtering in from the hall. But lucky for you, I do.
24. 15 minutes after sending another fraudulent progress report regarding Roman's daughter into the ether, I pull up to King's, dreading the hours ahead. Karma has a good laugh at my expense when my headlights beam directly on Cecilia as I roll to a stop, eyes fixated on the woman who has been occupying my waking thoughts the last few days. I rev my engine and signal.
Silhouettes of the birds surrounding her scatter, heading toward their cars. The sight of her feet from my hood, dressed to murder my reinforced resolve, sends humming, rapidly heating blood straight to my cock. My thirsty eyes drink her in through the windshield where she stands motionless, just as absorbed by me, while some of my crumbling resignation starts to scatter from me like windswept ash. Fuck. If this is what infatuation feels like, it's meant for lunatics. I can already sense the screws loosening themselves from the hinges of the door I swore I mentally slammed shut. Hating the parts of me responsible for the hasty betrayal, and Sean for knowing better as he steps up to her, my resignation is further compromised when her eyes light with Sean's request that she rides with me. After a brief back and forth, Sean catches my gaze for a beat before heading toward his Nova, his trust in me unwavering. I decide to hate him for as long as I can for his unshakable faith in me, along with sharing his current obsession, while firmly sticking to the belief that labels are for weak-minded, insecure men, that a woman's affection and loyalty should be freely given, never demanded. In a sense, he's right. In another, he's a goddamn fool. As allergic as I am to the feeling circus, even I know women crave some show of possessiveness, even if I agree they should be given the choice. Bass thrumming in time with my heartbeat, Cecilia approaches and I lean over and push open my passenger door. The night breeze sweeps her scent through my interior as she buckles in. Nostrils flaring, I tighten my grip on the wheel, furious with my inability to ignore the pull. I cut off her attempt to greet me by tearing out of the parking lot. Her musical laughter rings through the cabin as I race toward the meetup. Feeling every second of the attraction-induced chemical high, my earlier warning to Sean reverberates, striking me differently. Within the span of an hour, her perception of me will be altered, if not changed altogether. Just as I think it, she turns down the radio in search of some truth.
Are we ever going to have a real conversation?
Not possible. We had a good one not too long ago. A reminder.
That's not what I mean.
Want to start with politics or religion? I muse, because what in the hell could I possibly tell her that rings sincere? Opting to give her some half-baked truth, I relay the ideal existence of a 25-year-old mechanic. The man I might have been if I wasn't on the brink of waging war on monsters. One of them, her father. Briefly, I imagine a day of life without the club, a day filled with simple pleasures. Eggs, runny, coffee, black, beer, cold, music, loud, cars. I floor the gas.
Past.
Woman. I trail my eyes down her frame and feel her soften next to me due to the sentiment. When she moves to grip the hand resting on my gear shift, I pull it out of reach. I save that for when I can do something about it.
And you think that's affection?
Isn't it? A pregnant pause as she realizes intimacy is not in my wheelhouse.
What makes you happy?
All of the above.
Runny eggs and coffee make you happy?
She prompts, calling bullshit. If only my life were that fucking simple. What if you woke up tomorrow and there was no coffee? She frowns.
That would be tragic.
Next time you drink it, pretend it's the last time you can have it.
Great. There are two of you. Is that some philosophy? Okay, Plato.
My lips lift. You can discover more about a person in an hour of play than you can in a year of conversation. Sensing the familiar heaviness on my profile, I glance over. I was raised to appreciate the small shit. The understanding in her expression only has my need ramping up to get closer, because I do want her, but the reality I exist in makes that an impossibility. The current continues to thrum between us as knowledge batters me that once we reach the end of this drive, both the bliss and temporary peace I've found with her, in her, will most likely be snatched from my grasp. Making a rash decision, I turn onto a dead end that leads to a small clearing. Killing the engine, I'm struck stupid by the sight of her staring wistfully through the windshield up at the half moon. Her lit profile has my fingers itching to run through her flame. Leaning over with a, "Come here," I grip her hips and pull her to straddle my lap. Sinking in my seat, she surrounds me while I immerse myself in the temporary high, flexing my fingers through her silky hair. Lips painted red and eyes shrouded in black, she stares back at me, temptation personified. When she dips, it takes some effort to deny her kiss, but I do, knowing I don't have the luxury of time to lose myself. As she pulls away, her beautiful features twist in confusion. I'm just as confounded as to why I spent 2 days convincing myself that allowing our pull to overtake me to the extent it did at the lake was a one-time high. "He likes the red," I offer in shit excuse, which serves as a reminder to us both. Guilt mars her face at that reminder, and it's then I know she's fighting her own battle, a war with instilled morality. Her next question proves as much.
"How long have you known each other?"
The uneasiness emanating from her has me running my palms up her back as my traitorous cock starts to harden, giving absolutely no fucks about my stance where she's concerned. "Most of our lives."
"That close?"
she asks, rocking atop the bulge growing beneath her, gauging the heated warning in my eyes. "We're all close."
"Apparently so."
The rumble of approaching engines cut through the night noise, serving as a reminder that I'm on borrowed time. Cecilia glances over my shoulder as they fly by.
"They're leaving us."
"We left them," I correct, my palms hastening up and down the material covering her back.
"And we left them because?"
"Because." I lift to kiss her because I fucking want to, and stop myself just before impact. Eyes closed in wait, her fast, anticipatory exhales hit my lips as all replies die on my tongue. "Because in minutes you'll be fully aware of the level of deception we're capable of, and your moral dilemma about being shared will be a non-issue. Because once you do know, you'll distance yourself far beyond either of our reach." Slinking back into my seat, she opens her eyes to find me smirking in satisfaction. She wants me just as much.
"You're an asshole."
"And you're the most beautiful punishment I've ever been dealt." "That's not news. Anything else you need to know?"
"I don't know anything."
"Sure you do." I thrust up so she can feel just how fucking much I'm denying myself. Knowing I need to start armoring up for what's ahead, I opt to continue playing with the electricity at my fingertips because I'm just that selfish motherfucker. Stealing the rest of her breath, I grind against the heat I can feel seeping from her core and am rewarded by fast pants as she sifts through our conversation.
"You described most red-blooded men. Cold beer.
She moans as I continually thrust up, and she starts to give back as good as she's getting, swiveling her hips.
"Fast cars.
Thrust.
Black coffee.
Thrust.
Runny eggs and..."
"And?" I prompt, lifting her so she's suspended on my outraged dick.
"Me."
She whispers hoarsely before flashing a smile that serves as a direct hit. "Then you know enough." Giving myself a minute more, I lift her shirt and groan inwardly when I'm met with the sight of perfect tits and peaked nipples. Every bit of remaining self-control I have threatens to abandon me when I dip and pull her hardened flesh into my mouth. As I greedily feed, she explodes into motion, grinding onto me as I momentarily lose myself. I soak in what I can of her scent, the feel of her, knowing it might be my last taste. It's when she moans my name that I mentally start to force myself away, biting down on her exposed flesh before soothing away any sting with the tip of my tongue.
"That was cruel,"
she scolds. My dick agrees, but at least my conscience won't eat at me like it tried to after the lake. If I ever lay another hand on Cecilia Horner, at least she'll have a better idea of whom she's getting into bed with, even if key parts of the truth remain purposefully tucked away. Sean was right in the sense that she deserves to know who's fucking her. After tonight, she'll be aware of the true nature of the devils she's dancing with, and after that, it will be her decision to stay on the floor. "We'll have to pick this up,"
Later, I say, knowing it might be the last lie I ever tell her, that after Sean pulls back the curtain, she'll most likely run. Glancing over as I turn the key, something inside me stirs at the possibility that she won't. Vision muddled by black rage, someone grips my hand and I whip around, fist drawn to see Cecilia's mortified gaze. Shaking her concern off, my wrist throbs as I offer her another lie. I'm good. I'm anything but fucking good. Fury and adrenaline continue to war for dominance as Cecilia takes a cautious step away from me. Her expression is telling as Sean snakes a protective arm around her, pulling her into him to shield her. From me. Let him cool off, baby. Not fucking likely. As predicted, the last hour has been a fucking disaster. Feeling Cecilia's terrified gaze trail me, I break through the cover of the trees, fighting the urge to retrieve my Glock and end Andre and Mateo, no matter who's left in the audience. I'm bending my wrist and flexing my trigger finger when Tyler appears, eyeing my injury. Broken? I jerk my chin in reply. Andre no-showed. I know, he exhales, glancing toward the roaring bonfire. I've been tracking them both all night. Andre, the head of the Miami chapter, missed the window for our one-on-one, which in our club is a blatant sign of disrespect. Meetups are more a guise for the deals that take place between the trees at the party. A time meant to set up the when and where to trade stolen goods of each chapter's most recent takes, along with introducing any recruits. It's one of the few secrets we share. They're not even hiding it anymore. Something's up. I'm pretty sure you made it clear you're onto them, he says, gesturing toward my hand. Knuckles still dripping, I have no regrets about disfiguring the fucking bastard charged with doing Andre and Mateo's bidding. We've always known Mateo and Andre were killers for hire, psychopaths who take pleasure in their work, which we utilized for our benefit until recently. I'll switch cars and follow them back to the Florida state line, Tyler offers, and put some birds on patrol to make sure they all get the fuck out of our neighborhood. That's all fine and good, man, but you're not hearing me. They took out another black market contract yesterday, non-discriminatory. They've switched to killing innocents for a higher paycheck. They've broken every rule of our club and are rubbing it in our faces with their presence tonight with an added plan to weaken us. How so? I think they tried to take Sean out in the race. His eyes widen. The fuck? He tilts his head up as if summoning patience. Before we act, Dom, you need to be sure. Clearing some of the haze, I replay it objectively. Sean's car rounding the curve in the outside lane, one side mountain rock, thousands of feet of drop on the other. Florida's headlights disappearing from my rear view to run alongside me before gunning straight for Sean. When I realized his intent, I gassed my Camaro just in time to cut him off, forcing him toward Tallahassee, who crashed into the rocky cliff just after we cleared the turn. Positive. He knew the road and had to have mapped it before the meetup. There's no other fucking way to interpret how it went down. If Miami had so much as tapped either of Sean's bumpers, our brother would not be breathing right now. They need to be dealt with. Swiftly. Tyler's expression hardens as he glances around to ensure no nearby ears are privy to our convo. Make the call to France and text me the verdict. I shake my head. You can't go at this alone. We don't know the nature of the game they're playing. Don't underestimate me. Tyler snaps, warning lethal. I never have, brother. I'll text you his decision, but keep me updated. Eyes murderous, Tyler takes off in full executioner mode, and I know if granted permission, he'll see it through and make it painful. Clearing the trees, I stalk toward my Camaro and am stopped by a brunette at my trunk, her nails raking up my chest. Annoyed, it takes a few seconds for me to recognize her.
Hey, Dom.
Stephanie purrs, reeking of whiskey and cigarettes.
Been a while, and I've got a secret. I've been thinking a lot about you.
Funny, I've been thinking about everything but you.
Don't be a dick.
She pouts before hitting her knees and reaching for my belt.
This time, I'll let you come in my mouth.
Jesus Christ, Stephanie. I bat her hands away before lifting her by the underarms to stand.
This isn't a good time.
You didn't mind it last time.
That was what, 2, 3 fucking years ago?
I just wanted to play around a little and reminisce.
She stumbles in front of me and I grip her elbow to steady her. I think it's time we both forget you have no lips and move the fuck on. Go find another babysitter to suck off. I don't have time for this shit. Using my grip on her elbow, I gently guide her out of my path. She jerks her arm away, stumbling in the process.
Fuck you, Dom.
Not if I had a spare dick, Stephanie. Now would be a good time to remember who you're talking to and tread more carefully. If I were you, I would get back to the bird you came with. This doesn't look good on him. Just as I say it, her name is clipped out a few yards away. Her head snaps in that direction as I take a seat behind my wheel and pull my burner from my glove box to shoot off a text. Rogue birds. This can't wait. My burner rings a second later as Stephanie is not so gently carted off by her bird, and I catch sight of Sean pulling off with Cecilia in tow as Tobias speaks up. Talk to me. Miami is full on defecting. I get straight to it. They're taking black market contracts on innocence. Andre turned his back on me at the party, and they just tried to take Sean out. What the fuck? The instant change in his tone lets me know I have his undivided attention. Ow. During a race, they were going to make it look like an accident. I don't even think Sean knows how close he came to dying tonight. I stopped them right before they got him. It was close, brother. I rasp out a knot lodging in my throat. Too fucking close. It's a mob move. Exactly my line of thought. What transpired tonight aligns with the mob mentality of taking out the lieutenant because it would be too obvious if they went after me first. Tell me everything, he clips out, the noise in his background silenced by the closing of a door. I relay it all and end with my proposed solution. Tyler wants permission for turndown service. Denied. They tried to take out Sean, I roar, my patience tapped out. This can't go unpunished. A few tense seconds tick by before he speaks up. You do know that Miami has actual fucking mob ties. I know who the fuck they are, but they need a reminder of who we are. Where are you now? He clips out. Still at the meetup. Tyler's going to follow them to the state line. We're putting birds on patrol to make sure they don't overstay their welcome. But something needs to be done, brother. We can't let this go. I'll put them on permanent watch for now, until I can have a face-to-face with Andre. The time for peace talks is over. This isn't our fucking call. If we take the bait, we become baited. I'll handle it. How do you propose to do that a continent away, Frenchman? Silence. I'm pissing him off. Good. I can't believe you're willing to let this go. That's not what I'm doing. But we don't shoot first and ask questions later. They know the ins and outs of our fucking club, Dom, which makes this a delicate situation. Before we move, we need to at least try to come to some sort of understanding. Fine. Whatever. I turn my key and Tobias hears me start up my car. Where are you going? Blue lights race by just as I start to pull out, and I instantly kill my headlights before pulling between the trees. Dom! Blue lights. Someone non-club must have reported the race. Hold up. Just as I go to compose a text, I scan some missed messages. R. Blue lights on Canuga Road. P. Already following. Sean's leading him away. P. He's losing them. My shoulders sag in relief. They're on Sean and... I catch myself in time not to blurt her name. And? Tobias prompts. He's losing them. Good. Go home. Not yet. I'm going to help flush the streets until I'm sure the rest of Florida is headed south. Tobias, we can't let this go. I can catch up with Tyler and we can end this tonight. Miami, you're needed home. So are you. But you aren't fucking here, are you? He exhales harshly, circling the ice in his tumbler in his typical repetition of 3. How is home? Delphine. Here's an idea. Call her. I clip out and hang up. When someone blushes, doesn't that mean yes?
Le Petit Prince, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. 25.
My rainy days are yours, Dominic, if you want them.
She didn't run. Even after witnessing me at my most hostile and being made aware of some of the depth of our deception, she stayed. Not only that, but she also met me downstairs when I got home from patrol after the meetup, bandaged my wrist, and fucking bathed me before tucking me in. The only conclusion I could draw was that Sean had prepared her. And, well enough to the point that when he left the next morning, she chose to stay at the house for and to be with me. A day I've relived with my right hand through one too many cold showers. It rains a lot here. The weather in the days since has made a liar out of me, evidenced by way of the sun's rays currently lighting the room in the reflection of my bathroom mirror. Razor poised an inch from my face, I glare down at Sean's Spitz brandy, who whines just inside my bathroom door. What the hell do you want? I snap. She replies with an order-filled bark. Sighing, I rest my razor on the sink and jog the solid white hairball downstairs to the sliding glass door. Opening it enough to let the dog through, the heated summer wind breezes in as a reminder that the season has set in. Brandy races towards Cecilia, who's wearing the bikini I rid her of the first time I fucked her. Her back to me, she's bent over, purred ass thrust in the air and offering. I inwardly groan as Sean yells instructions from the side of the house, realizing the reasoning for her positioning as she moves a sprinkler.
A little closer to the fence.
Here?
Yeah, that's good, pup.
Is the water on?
She scrutinizes the arched metal bar full of holes.
It's not working.
As she further lowers to inspect the sprinkler, her bikini shifts, revealing a heaping handful of ass cheek. This fucking girl. Temptation mocks me mere feet away, along with the knowledge that there's not a drop of fucking rain in the forecast anytime soon. Each time I pull up the weather app, I hate myself a little more for it. The summer sun has decided there's no relief in the future for little Dom, who's currently growing 3 sizes too big in my boxers at the sight of a beautiful girl. A girl I now know a lot more intimately after a solid day in bed together, but crave to fuck like it would be the first time.
Now?
Sean asks.
Nope.
Cecilia calls back to him as I imagine a half dozen scenarios to approach her with how she's situated. She might not have run, but she did lay out ground rules. Ground rules I start to resent her for as the throb continues in my boxer briefs.
Huh,
I hear Sean say, knowing that tone.
Crank the dial up and see if that works.
This thing looks ancient. It's probably broken. Okay, try it.
Her shout turns into a shriek as she's soaked by Sean's design. Sean's deep laughter rings out as she scolds him with an
asshole.
Brandy begins to bark at the offensive sprinkler, the dumbest damned dog in existence, which is why I mostly ignore the fact that she does exist.
I'm going to cut and trim out front. Give me about 30 minutes.
Okay.
She calls, bending to pet Brandy as she eyes the sprinkler fanning water over the yard. Expression lightening, she stands and sprints toward the fence before turning and running to leap over it, soaking herself, a shriek bursting out of her. Images of Sean, Tyler, and me doing the same when we were rugrats shudders in. As she makes another pass in my direction, the sight of her so full of carefree joy has my chest tightening. Despite her physical allure, she's the picture of purity. Even if she experienced enough during her start with her parents to be just as jaded as I've become, she isn't. It's by choice that she embraces the lighter side of living, whereas I welcome the dark, dwelling amongst the shadows and manipulating them to suit. Like me, Brandy stands by observing her, equally captivated by what makes her tick, in an attempt to try and understand her. Cecilia continues to run back and forth through the waves of water, urging Brandy to join her.
Come on, girl,
she coos, running back and forth in demonstration. When Brandy joins in, leaping over the sprinkler in time with her, Cecilia's melodic laughter crashes into my chest, further widening the crack she's managed to create.
Disgusted that I'm inching toward creeper status after watching one too many passes, the half of my face covered in mentholated shaving cream begins to burn. Ripping my eyes away from her, I make my way back upstairs. Patting my face down with a damp towel a few minutes later, I spot the summer of my discontent staring back at my reflection.
Hi.
She whispers, her eyes rolling appreciatively down my frame. Hi. Hi. I narrow my return gaze on her. If this is hard up, I'm not going through it alone. Turning, I grip her wrist, yanking her into the bathroom. Palming the wall next to her head, I crowd her as I trace the droplets of water skating down her glowing skin. Her eyes search mine for a reason for my aggression, but my cock lets her know as it salutes her and remains at attention, pointing straight at her. When she opens her mouth to speak, I press my finger against her lips as Sean cranks the mower outside. Her chest rises and falls as I lower my gaze to her pink-painted toes while deciding my course of action. Gripping her shoulders, I position her in front of the toilet before shutting the lid and taking a seat. Draping the damp towel over my lap, I gather the rest of my supplies from the counter. Flicking on the faucet to refresh the water, I plug it before switching it off and lifting her foot, resting it on my knee. Wordless, Cecilia rattles in anticipation in front of me while I dispense some shaving cream into my hand. Palm full, I slowly begin to cover every inch of her leg and thigh as I speak. It takes an average of 20 minutes to ready a woman to the point of orgasm. Scraping the blade from her ankle up to her calf, I swish it in the sink and tap it twice before running it from above her knee to her thigh. A harsh exhale escapes her as I look up to see her dark blues hooding. Once I've made a few passes, I swish the razor through before again tapping away any lingering excess. Swish, tap, tap. Unfortunately for women, 20 minutes of stamina is pretty average for a man, which would make our creator seem like one cruel motherfucker. I scrape another path up the length of her leg. If said creator hadn't given us ways to remedy that. You see, I glide the razor along the ridge of her leg. What most men don't know, or give a damn enough to know, is that said creator did give us a number of efficient ways to get a woman where she needs to be. In fact, there are 30 ways, or more, depending on the woman. Swish, tap, tap. Knowing I have her undivided attention, I glance up and can't help smirking at the rapid rise and fall of her chest. Should we try a few of them out? She nods half a dozen times as I resume. It's sad, really, that most men think of a tight fit as a reward, and for some it's inevitable due to the size and girth of the male anatomy, but not all are as blessed as others. My own blessing agrees with a jerk as I make it a point to exhale along her freshly shaved skin, and goosebumps erupt. But considering what a woman's anatomy is capable of, a tight fit is often a sign that the prep work wasn't done properly. Swish, tap, tap. There's the inner thigh. I scrape the razor up to the top of her thigh as she palms my shoulders to steady herself. This crease at the top of it, I run my thumb along the sensitive skin just below her bikini bottom from her ass cheek to her hip as her soft pants begin to fill the bathroom. The armpit, swish, tap, tap. There's the ears, the stomach, and the hands. Pausing the razor, I lift one of the hands resting on my shoulder and pinch her pressure point as I gently brush my lips along the entirety of her palm, including the pads of each finger. She exhales my name as I draw the towel from my lap and pat away the excess cream. Brushing the tips of each pinky along her newly sensitive skin as I towel her off, her eyes close when the first moan escapes her. Such a beautiful, sunny day. A reminder of her fucking rules. Rules that hinder me from acting on any scenario in which my throbbing dick gains access to the heaven lingering inches